Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Tuesday, October 28th, 2014, episode 10.23, the Week 8 Recap Show. Oh, there was plenty of offense in Week 8, and Ben Roethlisberger does something nobody has ever done in the NFL. We're going to talk about the college football playoff picture, and I don't like it one bit. The Dallas Cowboys disappoint, and injuries hit the team and the St. Louis Rams. Oh, those injuries keep mounting up. And we have a good old boy, and Champ is calling it quits. All this coming up, let's chomp it in!
Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves.
Oh, and did I forget to mention the trade deadline struck? And there wasn't a whole lot of trading going on, but the St. Louis Rams didn't make a move. Before I get to that, I want to talk about The Walking Dead. Why do I want to talk about The Walking Dead? Because this thing is just, it blows my mind every single Sunday after I watch it. I was just like, I want more. Who was in the bushes? What was going on? People, if you are not watching The Walking Dead, I ask you, why? Why? You should catch up. They're all on Netflix. Catch up. Get to it. It's good stuff. Now, the World Series is almost over. Today, the Kansas City Royals put a 10-0 beatdown on the San Francisco, I was going to say 49ers, the San Francisco Giants. 10-0 was the final score, forcing a final and deciding Game 7, which will be played tomorrow, which leads me to this point. Folks, do you know that right now, at this moment, all four major sports in America are being played? The World Series, MLB, the NBA kicked off today, and the Lakers are already down by 15 points in the second quarter to the Houston Rockets. San Antonio Spurs got a one-point win over the Dallas Mavericks. And New Orleans beat Orlando 101-84, that all opening day in the NBA. NHL has kicked off. They're currently in their season. And, of course, the sport that I love and that you love and what we're talking about today, the NFL, obviously alive and kicking right at midseason. Things are going good. It is just amazing. It's an amazing time to be watching sports in America right now because it's a little of everything. And, of course, there's the NASCAR and the racing and the Formula One, all that stuff, if you like the racing stuff. But the main sports, the four main sports, NBA, NHL, NBA, and, of course, the NFL, which is why you're here listening to NFL Rants and Raves, all being played right now. And it's just great. Enjoy it, because tomorrow after the World Series Game 7, MLB goes away for a little while and you'll be down to just three sports, which is okay with me because I'm just 7 days away from going to London, baby. That's right. Next week, I will be traveling across the pond, going to London to watch the Cowboys take on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
It happened in London.
In London!
In London! Yes, that's exactly where it happened. In London, and that's where I'm going to be. I'm pretty excited. I cannot wait to make that trip. Do a little bit of work for Sky Sports News while I am over there. Now, before I get to the 15 games recapping of NFL Week 8, there's first somebody that I got to make fun of. I got to make fun of him because this person was
a freaking idiot
and earned him the right of
Boob of the Day.
That's right, Boob of the Day. That goes to the Chicago Bears linebacker Lamar Houston. Okay, this is what happened to Houston, all right? Houston tore his ACL, which is bad. I'm not making fun of his injury. I hate it when players get injured in the NFL. That's not what I'm making fun of. What I'm making fun of is that how he tore his ACL. Now, in the game between the Chicago Bears and the New England Patriots, which we'll get to in a moment, a game where the Patriots routed Chicago 51-23, pounding them into submission. Late in the game, with the Bears down by 25 points, late in the fourth quarter, there was about 4 minutes and change left. Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going with Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo, the backup quarterback for the New England Patriots. Now, once again, ask me, Steven, why is the backup quarterback in there late in the game? Because they're winning by 25 points. Is in the game, and Lamar Houston sacks Garoppolo in the game. Now, you're down by 25 points, and it's a routine sack. It's something that you get paid to do as a linebacker. That's your job, sack the quarterback. But what does Lamar Houston decide to do? I'm going to do a little dance. I'm going to do a little shimmy. I'm going to jump up, and I'm going to come down. Ow, my knee. And he falls down onto the ground, and you could see that he's in pain. He tried to get up because he was embarrassed that he fell. He tried to get up and walk it off, and then he realized, oh, man, I really hurt my knee. And he really hurt his knee. It turns out he tore his ACL. He is now going to miss the entire season. You are being a boob. You're losing by 25 points. And you sacked the backup quarterback. That's what you're going to get excited about? That's what you're going to celebrate? A sack of a backup quarterback in a game you are losing by 25 points. That, my friend, earns you
boob of the day.
Boob of the day. That is for Lamar Houston. I am very sorry that you got injured, but I'm not sorry how you got injured because you were being a boob, and now you get to miss the rest of the season, as confirmed by Bears general manager Phil Emery, who told everyone that it is, in fact, a torn ACL. I can't believe it. I'll get to that game in a minute. I just can't believe how you could sit there and think to yourself, I want to dance. I'm going to do a little shimmy because I sacked a backup quarterback and I'm getting killed by 25 points. How smart is that? Not smart at all. But thank you, because that allowed me a little bit of time to just make fun of you. Now, some sad news. A champ is calling it a day. Champ Bailey, that is, the 12-time Pro Bowl cornerback who played for the Washington Redskins and for the Denver Broncos, has told his agent, and his agent has told multiple reporters, that Champ has decided to hang up his cleats. He has decided to retire. Basically, it's a decision that was needed to be made. He's 36 years old. He was cut by the Saints after the preseason. And he tried out with the Detroit Lions and the Baltimore Ravens. Neither team signed him. And it was time. It was time for Bailey to make it official. He is retiring. Great player. Had a lot of success in the NFL. Finished up with the Denver Broncos. Got to talk with him last year at the Super Bowl, a few years ago in London. As a matter of fact, if you go out to the website, I will post the classic Champ Bailey stares down Stephen Miranda at the historic Oval Cricket Grounds in London. Because I asked him a question that he wasn't too happy with, and he kind of stares me down, and I love that picture. I think I may have Champ Bailey autograph that picture for me, because he's staring me down like, dude, are you seriously asking me that question right now? So Champ Bailey, hats off to you, man. Congratulations on a great career. Remember, he's been playing in the NFL since 1999. My oldest daughter, Elena, who's sitting here in the Rave Cave with me today, she wasn't even born yet. 1999, she wasn't even born. Champ Bailey was the 7th overall draft pick, and he was named an all-pro quarterback for the Washington Redskins twice before he was traded to Denver in exchange for Clinton Portis in the second-round draft pick. It was good for Denver, not so good for Washington. Clinton Portis was okay, I guess, for the Redskins. But anyways, another career has to go because father time catches up with all of us. And all I have to say is to Champ Bailey, hat tip to you, my friend. Thank you for the stare down. That was good fun. All right, that's it. Now let's talk about that first game that was early, 9:30 Eastern time, 6:30 on the West Coast, way too early for me. Game in London. It was an early game, and the NFL is actually saying that maybe they'll be willing to stage another early Sunday morning game. Just check it out. NFL spokesman Greg Aiello told reporters today, maybe he will do it. Maybe. Here's the deal, though. The game drew huge numbers. It got a 6.6 rating and a 17 share. Those numbers are comparable to what the World Series is drawing. 6.6 rating, 17 share. And I would say it's a little more than double what a normal pregame show gets for Fox. The pregame show gets about a 3.4, 3.5 rating. This was 6.6, so pretty impressive. I hope they don't do it because 6:30 is way too early for me on the West Coast. Let me sleep in, man. I want to sleep in till late. Then I'll get up, watch some pregame show, get to my 10 a.m. game. It's just too early in the morning, and I would not like it. I'm sure the people on the East Coast think it's great. They're like, wow, this is great. There's a game at 9:30 in the morning. I'm just like waking up like, oh, can I get a drink, something, a pancake or something? Something. It was a good game, though. Even though it looked like it was going to be a blowout, we'll talk about that one in a minute. But it was a pretty good game, and the numbers, 6.6 rating, 17 share, shows that Fox and CBS and the NFL might want to do that again sometime. Before I get to the games, there's one more thing that I'd like to talk about, and that is the college football playoff picture. If you don't know, if you've been living under a rock lately, you may not know that this will be the first year that college football will have a national champion that is decided by a four-team playoff. It's going to be the top four teams. They'll get seeded 1 through 4. Two teams will play each other. Then the winners will play each other in the national championship, and that's how they're going to decide who the national champion is. Because they had to get rid of that awful BCS. Goodbye. So the BCS has been replaced by the college football playoff. And basically today they announced their top 25. I'm a little disappointed. Right now, if the season ended today, those four playoff teams would be Mississippi State, 7-0. Florida State at 7-0, Auburn at 6-1, and Ole Miss at 7-1. Those are your four teams. And, okay, Mississippi State and Florida State, they're undefeated. Cool. Florida State, they're in there, although I think they actually lost to Notre Dame. They got a very, very fortuitous call at the end of that football game against Notre Dame because Notre Dame actually scored the game go-ahead touchdown with just a few seconds left in that game, but it was taken off the board because of a pretty bogus offensive pass interference call. which I saw Utah run the exact same play against USC this past weekend, and they didn't get called for offensive pass interference. So Florida State really at number two? I'm not sure. And you've got Ole Miss and Auburn with one losses above teams like Oregon and Alabama and Michigan State. There's going to be a lot of problems because, look, Mississippi State and Florida State, I think, you know, they still got some tough games ahead. I think they're all going to lose. There's going to be a whole bunch of teams sitting there at the end of the year with one loss. And how you can justify picking four of them is beyond me. Now, this committee is made of some leaders, some college athletic directors, and I just don't see how, you know, there's not going to be any biases toward, I mean, I can already see some biases. The majority of those are SEC teams. Four of the top six teams are SEC West teams. I don't understand it. It's like if you don't live on the West Coast, you don't know about the great football that is being played right now by Arizona, Arizona State, and Oregon. These are all teams with one loss. Heck, even Utah right now with one loss. Those are all pretty good football teams, but they're on the West Coast. They play in the Pac-12. Nobody cares about the Pac-12 because nobody stays up on the West, on the East Coast late enough to watch the Pac-12 games that start at 7 o'clock on the West Coast, which is a 10 p.m. start on the East Coast. Nobody's staying up to watch these football games. So how can you tell me that a committee of folks that aren't watching every single football game can tell me that a one-win Auburn team is better than a one-loss Auburn team is better than a one-loss Oregon team? And Oregon lost to an Arizona team when it was missing several of its offensive linemen starters, and they just barely lost. But they've blown out Michigan State and UCLA, and those two teams are in the top 25. I don't get it. It's like you're not going to make anybody happy with this four-team playoff. Everybody wants a playoff, and everybody's like, yeah, we need playoff in college football because this BCS stuff's just horrible. But they've made even more horribleness because there's not going to be any fair way to say this team that has one loss is better than and worthy of getting to the playoffs with this team that has one loss. Sure, there's strength of schedule. There's head-to-head matchups, various other statistics that they're going to use. But who are these 12 people that are on the selection committee? And why did we decide that these 12 people should be the end-all, be-all of who the top four teams get to play in this college playoff? That's what I want to know. Am I a little upset maybe that I wasn't, you know, asked to be on this committee? Probably. But there probably should have been some folks that were on the West Coast. I think maybe Pat Hayden is among one of them. I think maybe he is one. But I don't know who all is on the list. I guess that's what I want. Give me the list. I want to know all the 12 people besides Condoleezza Rice. And why in the world is she on the committee? Anyways, that's it. That's all I have to say. Thus endeth my rant. That's right. Endeth my rant. All right. It's time to get to 15 games. Joel joins the pack of fans to take on myself. And Joel struggled. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you fans. He struggled. Finished the week at 7-8, a losing record for the fans, not good. I didn't do all that better. I was 11-4. Well, 11-4 is pretty good and respectable. But you will be happy to know that of the, let's see, we differed on 6 games we differed on. And of the 6 games that we differed on, he only got one of them right. But fortunately for you, the fans, The one that he got right was the challenge game. He had Buffalo. I had this crazy notion that the Jets were going to be pretty good, that they were going to be all right, that they were going to do something with Percy Harvin other than some crazy, stupid trick kickoff return play that didn't work and only what netted them 2 yards. That was awful. If you haven't seen that play, go out and Google Jets trick kickoff return. It was bad. It was so bad that bad is getting a bad name. That's how bad it was. Anyways, so Joel, congratulations. You beat me in the challenge game, and that earns you this. Cool. If I can't find it, of course I can't find it. If I can't find it, I can't play it for you, but you are.
I am the smartest man alive!
That goes out to Joel. He finally gets the challenge game win for the fans. I'm a little nervous because that's all tied. That's 4-4. I get the challenge game next week, so I'll see if I can start making some distance on the fans. But I am making distance on the fans in the overall rank. After week 8, I stand at 82-38-1. That is a winning percentage of 68.2%. The fans stand at 70-50-1. That is 58.3%. Fans need someone who's going to step up. So if you're out there, if you're a listener of the show, you want to step up and represent the fans, make sure you get in your picks early so the randomizer will have a chance to pick you this week. All righty. Let's start with El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana. There were actually two Estupendo de la Semana games. We'll start at San Diego at Denver on Thursday night. Thursday night football, man, that was a very good game. The Denver Broncos, though, of course, prevailed. 35-21 win over the San Diego Chargers. Big win within the division. Look, you got to give it to San Diego. They came out, they played pretty good, but when Emmanuel Sanders scores three touchdowns, catching all three touchdowns from Peyton Manning, scoring four touchdowns in less than a week because he had caught one on Sunday and then had another three on Thursday night. That's pretty impressive. Emmanuel Sanders, the thing with the Denver Broncos is you never know who it's going to be. One week it's Demaryius Thomas. He lights you up for 160 yards and two touches. One week it's Julius Thomas, the tight end. One week it's, you know, Wes Welker. Now you've got Emmanuel Sanders. Who are you going to guard? It's like Peyton Manning is saying, you tell me who you want me to throw it to, and I'll throw it to that guy, and we'll still beat you. That is, in essence, the Denver Broncos on offense right now. You, the defense, dictate to me where I'm going to throw the ball. That's where I'll throw the ball, and we're still going to be good enough to beat you. I mean, that's what they're doing. I mean, Peyton Manning in this game, too. Peyton Manning, there was a moment in the game where he is mad. He is mad and livid at the fans at Sports Authority Field, Sports Authority Mile High. He's waving at him like, shut up. Be quiet. Shut up. I'm trying to run a play. And he just couldn't run. I mean, he had to call a timeout, I think. And then I think he complained laterwards after the game about the score operator and you can't be, you know, making all that noise. We're like down here in the goal line. We're trying to go in and score a touchdown and you're ramping up the crowd, getting them loud and stuff. And so Peyton Manning had a little shot at the scoreboard operator saying, I want to have a talk with that dude. I want to talk with that dude. But Phillip Rivers and the San Diego Chargers, valiant attempt. They tried to come back. Phillip Rivers had an interception there. It just wasn't good. And 35-21, Denver has taken complete command of the AFC West, as we knew they would. They're good during the regular season. And I'm looking at their schedule. I'm not sure who else is going to challenge Denver. I think they cruise through the division win, and I still believe that they will represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. 35-21 there. This was one of the games we differed on. I had Denver. Joel and the fans took San Diego, and it was good for a minute. It was close, but in the end, the Broncos took care of business. Moving on to the second Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana, the Philadelphia Eagles playing the Arizona Cardinals in Arizona in the desert. Joel once again took the road team. It's pretty impressive that he took that many road teams. I was kind of shocked, but took the road team nonetheless. And Philadelphia actually gave Arizona a scare. It was a tough, tough football game. This was a late game. Arizona pulled the game out at the end, winning 24-20, scoring 10 points in the fourth quarter. Carson Palmer threw a huge 75-yard bomb to Joe Brown to take the lead. And the Eagles had a chance. They marched down the field, had a chance late to get back into the game. They actually, I think, got all the way to the Arizona 16-yard line. So made it close. Made it pretty game at the end of the I think with like 8 seconds left, he actually Nick Foles threw a ball into the end zone that was almost caught. And then on the final play, with 1 second left, he hailed it in, and the ball was actually caught by a receiver, but he was out of bounds, and that thus ended the game. Final 24-20, Arizona. Carson Palmer, say what you want about this guy. He's old, whatever. Whatever the case is, threw for 329 yards, 2 touchdown passes, no INTs. He just was cool and calm, and the Eagles kept coming, and he kept delivering bullets. So, Larry Fitzgerald, big game, finally. 7 catches, 160 yards, and a touchdown. And Joe Brown, 5 catches for 119 in that touchdown, that 75-yard bomb. You got to start wondering what's going on with the Philadelphia Eagles. Offensively, sometimes they seem like, wow, that's impressive. Other times, it's like, yeah, that didn't click all that much. Nick Foles throwing a couple of picks in this game. One of them was really bad. That kind of hurt the Eagles' chances in this game. I'm not sure where the Eagles are. They're at 5-2. Fortunately for the Eagles, the Cowboys lost in overtime to the Redskins. We'll talk about that game as well. There's something. There's something not right. I think, you know, everyone looks at the Eagles and they look at their record and they're like, that's a good football team, but I don't see that yet. I don't see that they're clicking. Look, Foles threw for over 400 yards passing. I think he threw for 411. And any other day, that's impressive, but he threw a pick in the end zone that cost his team points. They were in the red zone. He forced the ball to Macklin. It got picked off by Cromartie, who he didn't even see Cromartie on the play. Chip Kelly is, I like him. You know, I liked him when he was in Oregon. And, you know, I like the coach. I don't like that he coaches the Philadelphia Eagles. But that's another story. Anyways, they get the loss, 24-20. They fall to 5-2. I think I have to eat some crow. Yeah, I'm going to do it. Should I do it right now? Yep, I'm going to do it right now. I am eating crow. And the crow that I am eating is that I said when the Arizona Cardinals were 3-0 that this was not a playoff team. They were nigh a playoff team. I don't know why I said nigh. It reminded me from an old episode. Nigh. They were nigh a playoff team at 3-0. But here they are at 6-1. Okay, this Philadelphia Eagles team that literally has come out of nowhere to impress. Now, I've always said that the NFC West was going to be and probably is the best division right now in football. You got the 6-1 Cardinals, 4-3 for both the Niners and the Seahawks, and the Rams are at 2-5. Now, the Rams, you got to, you know, they're hurting. They, once again, they don't have their number one signal caller. They got a couple wide receivers out. This is not the Rams team everyone expected to see, but they're still fighting hard. Heck, they beat Seattle, and they're 2-5. But 6-1, the Arizona Cardinals right now, they have a two-game cushion on both the 49ers and the Seahawks. Yes, they do have to still play those teams, but you got to remember, Arizona was one of those teams that went up into Seattle and beat St. Louis. But if you look at their schedule, I think here comes the meat for them. They got the Dallas Cowboys this week on the road at AT&T Stadium. Then they host St. Louis and Detroit. St. Louis is going to play tough. It's not an easy win. And Detroit is going to play tough. Then they go to Seattle. Then they go to Atlanta. They host Kansas City. They go to the Rams again. And they end their season hosting Seattle and on the road at the San Francisco 49ers. I'll say that the Arizona Cardinals need 5 more wins. All right? They're 6-1, and I think it's going to take 11 wins. So they're going to need 5 more wins. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They'll probably lose next time to Seattle. I don't think they're going to sweep Seattle. I'm sorry, they play Seattle twice. They'll split those. They're not going to sweep San Francisco is what I meant to say. They already beat San Francisco at home. They got San Francisco on the road to end the season. I think the Niners are going to need that game to win, to get in. I don't see them winning that one, so that's 2 losses right there. Dallas with their backs up against the wall this week. I think they will clean up the mistakes that they had against the Washington Redskins, know that they need that win before they get on a plane and head to London. That's a 3rd loss. I don't think they beat Detroit. I think the Lions by then will be healthy. They'll have Megatron and Bush back. They'll have a couple of their tight ends back. I think they'll be at full force offensively, and it'll be probably they'll get into a shootout, and I think that's a game that they can win. Plus, the Detroit Lion defense is pretty stout. I think they'll get after Carson Palmer. That's a 4th loss. That means that leaves them 5 games. Twice against St. Louis. I think they can win those 2. I think they can beat Atlanta. That's a 3rd win. It leaves Kansas City. I don't know. I don't know if they beat Kansas City. Kansas City's playing good football right now. You know what? I'm going to say they're going to get in. I've been so negative against the Arizona Cardinals for too long. I'm changing my mind right now on air. You witnessed it, people. You were here to witness me changing my mind on Arizona. I'm eating the crow. Arizona is a playoff team. They are doing really good. They're playing really good football. And with Carson Palmer back, yes, I see it. Arizona gets in. They will get it done. All right. Let's get to games of the week. We'll start with the Seattle Seahawks traveling to Carolina to face the Panthers. And I'll tell you what. This game was brutal to watch. Brutal. If you like defense, this was a great game. It was a field goal fest for a long time. 6-6. 9-6, Carolina had a lead in the 4th quarter. And that's when little Russell Wilson, who had thrown a pick earlier in the game, threw a nice touchdown pass to make, I think it was to Wilson. It was a 23-yard pass to take the lead for good, 13-9. And it was a game that I think Seattle showed, look, we were on the road. Usually Seattle's really bad on the road. We know that. We've seen them be pretty bad on the road. And this was another game where they weren't themselves. But they came out victorious. They got the W. Carolina is an enigma right now. 1 week, it's like, wow, that team is good. And then you look at them the next week and you're like, ugh, what was that? Who was that? I don't even know what that was. But Cam Newton was pedestrian, 12 of 22 for 171 yards, no touchdowns and a pick. Got him in field goal range three times, but that's about it. Couldn't do much offensively. And, yeah, it's the Seattle Seahawks, but they were at home. And they could only muster 266 total yards of offense. It's not like Seattle was gangbusters. They only had 310 yards of total offense. But still, you're at home. This is Carolina. And I think the problem with Carolina right now, and you got to look at Ron Rivera, is there's no identity. There's nobody really on the offensive side of the ball that you say, that is the guy, other than Cam Newton. Cam Newton can't do it all. He can't throw to himself, and he can't hand off to himself. Well, I guess he could take a couple, but he had, I think, 12 rushing attempts in this game and only managed 24 yards. So he's not breaking for those long runs anymore, and he's got to rely on throwing the ball to his receivers. Right now, it's a rookie receiver, Kelvin Benjamin. He's a rookie. He's playing some really good football for a rookie. He had four catches for 94 yards in this game. But that's what the Panthers have to rely on. It's not good enough. It's not going to be good enough all season long. It certainly wasn't good enough this week. Marshawn Lynch got 14 attempts, 62 yards. I know everybody's talking about Marshawn Lynch getting out of Seattle, wanting out of Seattle. I don't know about all that, but I do believe that Lynch's days in Seattle are numbered. He'll probably finish the season with them, and I doubt he makes it there next year. Final score, 13-9, Seattle over the Carolina Panthers. Dropped Carolina to 3-4-1, while the Seattle Seahawks improved to 4-3. One thing about the NFC South, that 3-4-1 record for the Carolina Panthers, that still has them in first place right now. That's got to be. It does. It has to be the worst division in football. When 3-4-1, you're sitting there with the lead in your division. And mind you, the Carolina Panthers have a net points of negative 41. Minus 41 is their net points. Yet they lead the division at 3-4-1. Not good. Next game of the week, the Indianapolis Colts travel to Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Steelers. And how about that Ben Roethlisberger? Oh, my goodness gracious. He went off throwing six touchdown passes and a whopping 522 yards.
What?
That's right, 522 yards. Ben Roethlisberger sets a Pittsburgh Steelers franchise record for throwing for those 522 yards and six touchdown passes. He was just like 32 yards shy of the NFL single-game passing record that I don't know why they didn't let him throw some more. I would have had tried to break that record. That's a record that stood since like the 1950s. He's also the first player in the history of the NFL to go over 500 yards passing in two games. That's pretty impressive. The yardage for Ben Roethlisberger in the game was the fourth highest total in NFL history. Antonio Brown, big part of that. He had 10 catches for 133 yards, two touchdowns. And I don't know what to make of this season. 1 week, the Indianapolis Colts defense looks unbeatable. I mean, they look like they can just stop just about anyone. And then they go and they face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I know it was on the road, but they give up 639 offensive yards, 522 in the air to Ben, and 117 rushing. That was just uncalled for. And it's not like you know, Andrew Luck was pedestrian. He threw for 400 yards. He had three touchdown passes, 400 yards. Unfortunately, he did have two picks. That wasn't good. He did fumble the ball once, but he didn't lose it. And I just, you know, it's like one week, it's like, this is the best team ever. And the next week, it's like, yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. So, 51, a 50 burger on the Indianapolis Colts. 51-34 was the final score. The Pittsburgh Steelers have now won two games in a row. They're 5-3. And the Indianapolis Colts also at 5-3. But the Colts, they are in first place in their division. They have a one-game lead over the Houston Texans. The Pittsburgh Steelers are still at 5-3. Even at 5-3, are sitting there in third place, second place tie with the Baltimore Ravens, who they have this week coming up on Thursday Night Football. All right. Game of the week for the Chicago Bears and the New England Patriots. I thought this game was going to be close. I thought this game was going to be good. And instead, bad, big mistake Jay came out, and it was not good at all. The New England Patriots spanked Chicago 51-23. Tom Brady, 5 touchdown passes, 354 yards. And even though Jay Cutler did throw for 3 touchdown passes, he had an interception. He had another lost fumble, which that fumble, I believe, was returned for a touchdown. And I think the Bears are, they're in some kind of funk that I'm not even sure the Bears know what kind of funk they're in. That's how bad it is. At the end of this game, they kind of sat Cutler down when it was out of hand. Jimmy Clausen came in. It was pretty bad. And it's weird because Matt Forte is trying to carry this team. He had 114 yards rushing, another 54 yards receiving on 6 catches. They had a touchdown. But I really don't know what I am at a loss as to what the Chicago Bears are. They're 3-5. That's what they are. They're in third place in their division behind the Detroit Lions, who are 6-2, and the Green Bay Packers at 5-3. They're tied for last place with Minnesota, who's also at 3-5. The Chicago Bears, I didn't see. I knew they were going to lose the game. I picked New England. So did, actually, Joel, this is another game that Joel missed. He had Chicago. I picked New England. And I thought it was going to be a close game. That's, you know, I'm pretty sure that's why Joel took the game, picked the Bears. But they just got blown out. They had no answer for Tom Brady. And Rob Gronkowski, the Gronk is back. 9 catches, 149 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was a beast. One play, he dragged like 2 Bears defenders into the end zone. Final score, 51-23. I already talked about Lamar Houston and his ridiculous play earning him
boob of the day.
Bottom line, folks, if you're getting beat down by 25 points and you make a play of any kind, it's best not to celebrate. Just move on. Move on. I hope they learn. But they never will. I mean, you would think that they would have learned when Gramatica messed up his leg for celebrating for making a field goal. It's like, dude, you're a field goal kicker. You made a field goal. Why are you jumping up and down like you just won the Super Bowl? Ugh. But players apparently did not learn from that. They'll still celebrate stuff that should not be celebrated. Final score, 51-23. Patriots improved to 6-2. Bears dropped to 3-5. Final game of the week. Actually, there's 2 more. The Green Bay Packers travel to New Orleans to face the New Orleans Saints. Ah, Green Bay, how you let me down. The Green Bay Packers just, they got a scare. They got a scare when Aaron Rodgers kind of ran around the corner for a huge gain, but he kind of tweaked his hammy, stayed in the game, passed for 418 yards, but he just wasn't himself after that, and they got after him. The Saints defense, talk about Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. After being really, really bad, they really stepped it up. They intercepted Aaron Rodgers twice. They sacked Matt Flynn, caused him to fumble, picked that one up. So 3 recorded, 3 turnovers. Drew Brees was efficient, 311 yards, 3 TDs, very impressive. That's all I can say about that. I mean, the New Orleans Saints, when they're at home, they're like a different football team. And they played really, really well. 44 points against Green Bay, 44-23 in the final there. New Orleans, like I've said all along, it's fortunate for them that they are in the NFC South. That keeps them just a half a game away from first place. The 3-4-1 Carolina Panthers. The Green Bay Packers are in trouble. I know that Aaron Rodgers had told the Green Bay Packer fans to relax. He said, relax. Don't do it. Relax, relax. Well, it may not be time to relax. I think the Green Bay Packers are in for a battle. They're in for a fight. They have a pretty tough schedule still. If you look at the Green Bay Packers and what they have to do over the course of the next 9 weeks, they've got some pretty tough division games. They have to play the Bears again. They have to play in Minnesota. And even though the Vikings are struggling, that's always a tough game. They still have to play the Detroit Lions again. That's a game that they already lost to the Lions once. They have to travel to Buffalo to play the Bills. They have to play the Patriots. So definitely not going to be easy for the Green Bay Packers, and that's going to be a team that I will watch very closely from here on out. The final game of the week, Monday Night Football, Washington Redskins travel to Dallas to face the Dallas Cowboys, and this is why you play the games. On paper, everyone had Dallas. Nobody gave Washington a chance. Here comes Colt McCoy. Hasn't started a game since 1963. Okay, it hasn't been that long, but it's been a while since Colt McCoy has started a game. Leads the Washington Redskins to overtime in Dallas. They get a field goal, win 20-17 in overtime. Quite a scare for the Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo takes a shot to the back, laid on the ground there for a while. Looked pretty good. Looked pretty bad, I'm sorry. Didn't look good at all. He went into the locker room, came out. Fortunately for him, thank goodness that it was no structural damage. It was just a contusion. He took a knee to the back, and I'm sure that had to hurt like all heck. But he lobbied to get back in here. And here's where, I don't know, it's kind of questionable. The Dallas Cowboys had Brandon Weeden, backup quarterback, come in. Leads him on two drives, and both of those drives resulted in points. He got 10 points, field goal and a touchdown pass. And he was a Dez Bryant drop away from leading them to two touchdowns, actually. But still, two touchdown drives. Tied the game, 17-17. At the end of the game, the Cowboys stop Washington. They force a punt. They get the ball back at about their own 9-yard line. And that's when Romo talked himself back into the game. Now, trust me, I was at a game against the San Francisco 49ers where Tony Romo talked himself back into the game. He came in with a broken rib and a punctured lung, and he threw a pass, got them into overtime. They wound up winning that game, beating San Francisco in San Francisco. I was at that game in the press box. I saw it live with my own eyes. I actually saw Romo after the game in a press conference where I stood right next to him. The dude was in pain. The dude is tough as nails. I will give him that. But in this particular instance, he couldn't move. He wasn't completely right, and the Redskins knew that. During those two drives when Brandon Weeden was out there on the field, the Redskins weren't blitzing because they didn't know what to expect from Weeden. They hadn't seen him. They had no film. They had to ease up a little bit on their blitzes because they didn't want to get burned by the blitz. Well, they decide to sit Weeden after he had done what I said, take him to 10 points. They bring back out Tony Romo. Like I said, I respect him for being tough, and he's tough as nails. I get that. But on that drive there at the end of the game, if they get in field goal range, kick a field goal, they win 20-17, they go home. There is no overtime. Instead, he misses badly on his first pass. His second pass, there's a blitz. He gets the ball knocked out of him. fortunate that the Cowboys and DeMarco Murray are able to bounce back on it and recover that football. Otherwise, it would have been disaster right there. And then on third down, he never even had a shot at completing the pass. So they have to punt, and it's over. Actually, on third down, he did complete a pass to Terrence Williams, which was almost intercepted. Went through the defender's hands. But they got that first down, but then he threw a play. He threw an incomplete pass. They called intentional grounding. They were forced to punt. I think if Brandon Weeden is in there at that point, the Redskins play it differently because it's a quarterback that they've not seen. And he had already shown some success. I'm not sure that the Cowboys made the right move. But not my call. And if the doctor said he's cleared to go, then I've always been a proponent of you don't lose your job because of injury. And if the doctor says he's ready to go, then he's ready to go. You put him out there and he goes out and plays. It was just unfortunate that in overtime he wasn't able to make enough plays to get his team down the field. That being said, the Cowboys now have a dilemma. Here come the Arizona Cardinals. Are you going to throw a hurt Tony Romo out there, or are you going to try and let Brandon Weeden carry you to a win? See what you got in Weeden and see if he can be the backup that you need in case Romo does go down for an extended period of time. We'll find out. The final there in that game, the Washington Redskins sneak out a win 20-17 in overtime on Monday Night Football. They improve to, I mean, if you call this improving, they improve to 3-5, while the Dallas Cowboys dropped to 6-2. The Cowboys had a chance to take a good lead over the Philadelphia Eagles there, but instead with the loss, only have a half point win. A half point lead in the NFC East. All right, folks, it's getting late. It's been kind of crazy. I've been up since like 3 o'clock in the morning since I did some work for Sky Sports News after Monday Night Football last night. I'm going to rocket fire through these games because I don't see anything too interesting that we really need to talk about other than the implosion of the New York Jets. So let's get to games of importance. The Detroit Lions against the Atlanta Falcons from London, Wembley Stadium. That was the early morning game. Atlanta Falcons take a 21-0 lead into halftime. It's like, man, that looks bad. Detroit looked bad. It was like awful. Well, they came roaring back. Scored 10 points in the third quarter. And 12 points in the fourth quarter, 22 unanswered points. They get the win, 22-21. All I have to say about this game is that the league needs to look at a situation that happened to the Detroit Lions and the Atlanta Falcons at the end of this game. Detroit gets in position to kick a field goal. They spike the ball. Right? They spike the ball to stop the clock. That's fine. The clock is stopped. But then they run out the field goal kicker. They get in position. They get ready to go. Time expires, and they get a delay of game just as the kicker kicks the field goal. And he misses it. He misses the kick. But there's a flag. It's delay of game penalty. They march it back 5 yards. He kicks it again. This time he makes it, time expires, game over. They had a penalty. They were penalized because they couldn't get the play off on time. However, instead of being penalized, like, hey, you don't get to kick the field goal now, they were awarded another play. Gives them more time, kicker gets ready, kicks the field goal, they win the game. They were rewarded for making a mistake. The mistake was they didn't get the playoff on time. It was delay of game. But they got to kick it again, even though they missed it. I don't see how that's fair there. I mean, that doesn't seem fair to the Atlanta Falcons. We did everything right. We were on the field. We were on time. We were ready to go. They had a delay of game penalty, so it should be over. There shouldn't be time for them to kick a field goal. But there is. And they wound up winning 22-21. Congratulations to the Lions. They're 6-2. Atlanta drops to 2-6. I'm sure the flight from London back to Atlanta had to have been a long one. I know Arthur Blank, the owner, was not too happy. He says, you should not lose a game like that. And it's quite right. You shouldn't lose a game like that. He missed it. I just saw the instant replay again. He missed the field goal. 5-yard penalty. No, decline it. It's game over. It's game over. So instead he tries to kick a 48-yarder, and this time he makes it. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. All right. Next game of importance, the Baltimore Ravens travel to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. And I knew the Bengals. The Bengals want this division. They want to say, we are the AFC North. We are what the AFC North is all about. We are the Cincinnati Bengals.
Here's the Bengals crawling. Lean and angry. Here he comes a crawling. Lean and hungry and offensive brutes.
And win the game for Cincinnati. They did. The Bengals hold on to defeat the Baltimore Ravens and take and increase their cushion there in the AFC North. No, it's not that huge of a cushion, but they do own the series against the Baltimore Ravens. They have beaten them now twice. Cincinnati sits at 4-2-1, while Baltimore and Pittsburgh are right behind them at 5-3. The Ravens had a chance. It's not like they didn't have a chance in this game. Cincinnati just wanted it more. And Cincinnati has wanted it more against Baltimore, against Pittsburgh, and against Cleveland more over the last couple of years than I can remember. Cincinnati's in good position now to just kind of roll on out, win this division, and move on into the playoffs and hopefully start focusing on the playoffs. But they can't get too complacent. That's where we are with Cincinnati. That they hope, and the hope is that they don't get all comfortable with these two wins. But it was a big win, 27-24. Dalton led the Bengals on a touchdown scoring drive late in the game. And that showed a lot of moxie. I think he actually even ran that final touchdown with like 3 minutes left. He runs the ball in for a touchdown to give him the 1 yard run to give him that 27-24 lead. Now, there was a little bit of controversy. Flacco, after that, threw a huge bomb to Steve Smith Sr. Scored a touchdown, but there was a flag for offensive pass interference. Offensive pass interference. They said Steve Smith pushed off, and that's how he became open. Now, if you look at the play, it is true. He does look like he kind of pushes off a little bit. But it wasn't egregious. It wasn't like, oh my God, that sure was a push off. But nonetheless, it was called. It nullified the touchdown, and the Bengals get the win, 27-24. Baltimore is going to be scratching their head about how in the world did we lose twice to the Cincinnati Bengals already this year. And that's just the way it's been. Cincinnati opened the season against Baltimore, got a 23-16 win in Baltimore. Now they beat them at home, 27-24. So they own the tiebreaker against Baltimore if there's a tie, although it's going to be very difficult for Cincinnati, I guess, to finish with a tie since they already have a tie at 4-2-1. I think that tie with Carolina is going to go a long way for the Bengals. All right. Finish it up. The final game of importance, the Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets.
I thought this was a big game for Buffalo. Certainly a big game for the Jets. The Jets are bad, folks. Geno Smith, 3 interceptions in the first quarter, and he got the hook. Finally, I've been calling for the hook for weeks. Finally, the Jets decided enough is enough. You just can't throw 3 picks in the first quarter. And they benched him. Michael Vick came in, kind of gave him a spark. The game was close for a little bit. I think they were only down by 7 points at halftime. But it was just not enough. The Jets don't have any weapons. They have no running game whatsoever. Outside of Percy Harvin, who really wasn't a factor in this game, it's too much. Buffalo, just too much, too many weapons. Sammy Watkins was fantastic. 43-23 beatdown of the New York Jets. Kyle Orton was efficient, 4 touchdown passes, 238 yards. Sammy Watkins, 3 catches for 157 yards. That means every single one of them was a bomb. He had 1 touchdown, would have had 2, but he decided to showboat a little bit. Started showboating at about the 10-yard line, and he actually got run down and got tackled at like the 7. Dude, score a touchdown, and then you can showboat. Rookies, when are they going to learn? All right, the final there, once again, 43-23. The Buffalo Bills improve to 5-3. They're right there in the thick of things in the AFC East. The New York Jets fall to 1-7. Yeah, they are that bad. All right, finishing up, games of interest. Oh, by the way, that was the challenge game. That's the one game that Joel got right against me. Congratulations to the fans. They've now tied it up at 4 games apiece. Games of interest, St. Louis at Kansas City. The Rams just continue to get hit by the injury bug. This time it was Long, who tore the same ACL as last year. And Brian Quick, the wide receiver, dislocated shoulder and a torn rotator cuff. Both of those guys are going to miss the season. Kansas City just was too much. Did all kinds of damage. 34-7 beatdown of St. Louis. They scored. The Chiefs' defense was just amazing. And the Chiefs scored everywhere. They scored on offense. They scored a kick return for a touchdown. They scored a field goal. They scored on the ground. It was just pretty impressive. Big win. They're at 4-3. They're still in the thick of things in the hunt. St. Louis at 2-5 can all but kiss the season goodbye. The Houston Texans travel to Tennessee to face the Tennessee Titans. The Titans, starting rookie quarterback Hare, is his name. Okay, maybe not Hare. But they did start rookie Zach Mettenberger. Mettenberger turned the ball over twice. It was just his first start, and he threw for 2 touchdown passes and almost 300 yards, 299 yards. But it was a little too little, a little too late. This game was over way before he did that. He scored those touchdowns in the second half. At that point, the Houston Texans had the game in the bag. 30-16 was the final there. Tennessee Titans, they're very blah right now. I think that's the word, blah. Mettenberger had the pick. He lost the fumble. And I can't believe that is the future of that franchise. He didn't look sharp. I don't understand the benching of Locker, but that's what they decided. So that's what they're going to live with for the rest of the season, see what they got in Mettenberger. I don't see a lot. Houston improves to 4-4. Tennessee falls to 2-6. And this game was just not very good for the Tennessee Titans. There's no offense. I mean, I think they had barely 320 yards, I think, of total offense. Most of it passing. Only 36 yards rushing. You're not going to win a lot of football games if you can only rush for 36 yards. That's for sure. In the nap games, the Minnesota Vikings took it to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, they didn't take it to them. They forced overtime is what they did. And in overtime, Anthony Barr, a former UCLA Bruin, Anthony Barr, first a fumble on the first play of overtime, stripped it, picked it up, and returned it 27 yards to get a touchdown to give the Vikings a 19-13 victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in overtime, kind of stunning the crowd. You know, they were in Tampa Bay. They were like, yeah, we're going to overtime. We got a chance to win. We got a chance to win. Okay, game over. All right, it's game over. So, Teddy Bridgewater was okay, decent. I think the best thing I could say about Bridgewater is that he did not turn the ball over. It's great. 24-42, 241 yards and a touchdown. Just did enough. McKinnon running the football. 16 attempts for 83 yards. That was pretty good. And they did enough. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers continue to say that Mike Glennon is their quarterback. And I keep saying good luck because you need another one. 19-13 the final there. 3-5 are the Minnesota Vikings. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers drop to 1-6. The Oakland Raiders travel to Cleveland to face the Cleveland Browns. And the Cleveland Browns just did enough to take care of business. 23-13 final over the Raiders. The Raiders I want to say something positive about them, but there's nothing. I mean, I guess you could say, you know, Carr was okay. He had 328 yards passing and a touchdown, but they asked him to throw the ball 54 times. 54 times. You heard me correctly. He completed 34 of those 54 pass attempts for 328 yards. But there's not much there. Darren McFadden had a fumble. Carr fumbled the ball once. He didn't throw a pick, but he had a fumble. And you can't turn over the ball, especially when you're on the road. Cleveland Browns took advantage. They ran away from it late. 23-13 was the final there, and they took care of business. And the final nap game, the Miami Dolphins travel to Jacksonville to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Miami, as expected, took care of business, led mostly by their defensive unit. They needed that defensive unit because Tannehill was just okay. He was 16 of 29 for 196 yards. He threw a touchdown, but he also had a pick. But it didn't matter. Blake Bortles seemed to have regressed a little bit, threw two interceptions, lost the fumble, so responsible for three turnovers. The bright spot for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Denard Robinson, looking really good. He looking like he may be the starting running back. He had 18 carries for 108 yards. That was pretty impressive. Lamar Miller still running the ball, toting the ball hard for the Miami Dolphins. Had 21 yards receiving and 78 yards on the ground rushing on 14 attempts. The thing for the Miami Dolphins is that they had an interception return, 81 yards in the second quarter by Delmas. And that really kind of like what got the juices flowing for the Dolphins to get it going. Then in the second half, Tannehill kind of got it together a little bit. Bortles touchdown pass to Robinson was late in the fourth quarter. It was a little too late. And that made it 27-13, Miami over Jacksonville. Miami improves to 4-3, still in the hunt for the AFC East. The Jacksonville Jaguars at 1-7 are looking like they're just trying to play out the season and getting ready for their London trip. And I must get ready for the London trip as well. I'll bring you a preview of Week 9. Most likely will not be a recap of Week 9 because I will get on a plane that Tuesday after Week 9 is over. I will try and do a preview of Week 10 while I am in London. if I can get all of this gear packed and on the way with me. So, once again, you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I thank you all for listening. Wherever in the world you are, however it is you're downloading or whether you're streaming the show, thank you for taking the time to listen to the show. I'm playing a little bit under the weather in case you can hear my nose. I'm a little stuffed up and stuff. But you know what? I'm here playing for you, folks. And that's what it's all about. Plus, I'm a little down. You know, I hate losing to the Redskins. I think if anybody knows that, if you are a Dallas Cowboy fan, there is one team that you do not want to lose to. You, as a matter of fact, would want to go. You are okay going 2-14 as long as those two wins are against Washington. Those are for you Cowboy fans out there. Not me necessarily, but for you Cowboy fans out there. Finally, if you're not following the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, get on it, people. Find all the social media handles on www.nflrnr.com. And if you want to be a fan participant, make sure that you make your picks on nflrnr.com/pick'em in the pick'em game. I'm Steven Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out!